Good morning. My name is Adelia Huang. I am a hearings officer. This is case number 3180019 regarding an appeal of a Bureau of Transportation decision. The time right now is 9 o'clock in the morning, a little bit after 9 o'clock. It is March 27th, 2018, and this is the time and date scheduled for this proceeding, an appeal by CJE LLC. And there appear to be both parties in the hearings room ready to go ahead and proceed. And for the record, I just want to have each of you state your name, first and last name for the record, and spell it, please. So let's start with you, Mr. Coombs.
My name is Kevin Coombs. Last name is spelled C-O-O-M-B-S.
And you are a representative on behalf of CJE LLC?
Correct.
What is your title?
I'm the owner manager.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. England.
My name is Eric England. Last name is spelled E-N-G-L-A-N-D.
And first name?
Eric, E-R-I-C-H.
Thank you. And who do you represent?
I represent the Portland Bureau of Transportation with the Regulatory Division.
Okay. So, before we get started, my job as a hearings officer is to be a neutral decision maker and to figure out whether or not the determination that is the subject of the appeal, whether or not that determination is supported by the laws and facts. Before we get into that evidentiary procedure, I need to go over the objections that were raised by Mr. England. And actually, before I do that, I do want to go over a couple of additional administrative housekeeping things with Mr. Coombs. So, Mr. Coombs, did you receive all of... Actually, let me back up here. When you sat down in these chairs, there should have been a document with a blue bar, and there are some exhibits listed on that document. Mr. Coombs, if you take a look at the documents that look like they were submitted by PBOT, Exhibits 8 and et cetera, can you tell me, can you confirm whether or not you received copies of those documents in the mail?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And then my office should have sent you a notice of hearing in addition to a form that states something like appeal, statement of rights, or statement of rights, something to that effect. Do you recall reading that document? It would have come from my office, the hearings office.
I do not have anything that mailed to me from this office.
Okay. Let's go ahead and provide that to you. I'm going to provide you a statement of rights. If you've already read it, you can tell me, but I do want to provide you with that time to go over it.
Thank you.
We'll pause the record. Let me know when you are done. Okay, Mr. Coombs, did you have enough time to read the appeal hearing statement of rights?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So, I'm presuming that because you're here, you received the notice of hearing. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And so that's the same address that I'm going to be mailing any decision that I make, a written decision, in a few weeks after today's hearing. So please look out for that in the mail, and the same goes for Mr. England. Today's hearing is a recorded proceeding. One thing that is beneficial about having the audio recorded is that we can put a copy of the audio recording up on the hearings office website for your, if you need to listen to a copy or the hearing in the future, you can punch in your case number and it'll pop up the audio for you to download. That being said, some folks tell me that they prefer for the audio to not be put up online because of whatever privacy concerns or anything at all, just preference. So if you tell me that you prefer for the audio to not be uploaded online, what that means is you can request the audio, but you'd have to make a specific request and pay about $5 for the audio to be burned onto a CD. So what would you like to do? The default is have it online or opt out of that process?
I'm fine with the default.
Okay. Okay, so, The purpose of today's hearing is to focus on the validity of the decision that was issued, and it looks like that decision was issued on February 8th, 2018, resulting in a vehicle denial. And before we get into whether or not I will uphold or deny or modify that particular decision, I do need to go over the specific objections that were raised by the PBOT representative. So, and just for your reference, Mr. Coombs, I do not work for the Bureau of Transportation, so I don't have any interest in the outcome of this case other than making sure that I do my job and apply the laws and rules correctly to the facts. So, Mr. England, please go ahead and tell me why you are objecting to my granting of this hearing.
The hearing was granted after the 10-day period in which a hearing could be granted, according to the administrative rules found on the Code Hearings website, number one. And then number two, the appeal for this hearing is not going against the validity of the vehicle denial. It's a request for a change in process. That's an internal process to our division, not necessarily one that goes against the administrative rule that dictates vehicle age exemptions.
Okay, so Mr. Coombs, now is your time to respond. Can you tell me just briefly why you believe you had good cause to submit your late request?
The tracking from the United States Postal Service on the certified letter of the original notice of the denial shows that the letter was returned to the sender on February 20th and therefore did not get delivered to me soon thereafter the postmark or letter date.
Do you know why it was returned to the sender?
From what I can tell by the tracking information, the letter didn't leave the UPS regional facility in Portland on February 9th, was in transition for 8 days, arrived at my mail location, which is a business office, has closed on Saturdays on Saturday, February 17th. And since no one was there to sign for it, I would assume that the post office then returned it to the sender on February 20th.
That's a bit curious because I would hope that the post office would try to make another attempt to mail it, but
I did finally receive it since I was able to respond to that. I did pick it up on Friday, February 23rd. I was notified by my mail service on February 22nd that I had mail. They did not say what that mail was. I picked that mail up on February 23rd. And when I received the notification of denial, soon thereafter, 2 business days thereafter, I did submit the appeal.
Okay. Okay, regarding the objection to granting the appeal because it was late, I am finding that Mr. Coombs has demonstrated good cause for the late submission, and I'm making that based upon the dates that were provided. It looks like there was some issue regarding the mail being delivered on time because the determination date is February 8th, 2018, so therefore it was due to be received any request to my office on February 22nd. We didn't receive a request from Mr. Coombs until February 27th, but based upon the testimony I've heard and the information submitted in the letter in exhibit number 3, I am finding there is good cause to allow the late hearing request. And I'm going to waive the 10-day requirement under City Code 2210030. So we're gonna next turn to Mr. England's second assertion that Mr. Coombs, or the appellant, instead of requesting that the determination be found invalid or modified somehow, Mr. Coombs is requesting a change in the process, which Mr. England very correctly stated, I do not have control over that. Nothing in this proceeding it provides me with that authority to do that. So basically, it is, again, my focus is on whether or not the determination is valid or invalid. So what is your response to that, Mr. Coombs?
The response to
Mr. England's objection that the issue that you're bringing is not one that's necessarily appropriate for a hearing, but rather what you're requesting is a change in a process that the Bureau of Transportation has when they make these determinations.
I feel that the communications from Mr. England and PBOT have not addressed my questions that I have asked, and because they have not addressed the questions that I have asked, I've not been able to complete the repairs requested because I have not had clarification as to what appropriate repairs would be, and their denial of the permit without me having the ability to submit the repairs that I have done is not appropriate because I haven't been able to adequately respond to their initial requests because they haven't responded to my questions since then.
Okay. So are you contesting that the determination, the denial, the vehicle denial, are you contesting whether or not that's accurate or not?
I feel that it's premature to have denied the vehicle age exemption because I've not had submitted the repairs that I had that have been completed, and ones that have not been completed because I have not gotten adequate answers from them on three specific issues on the list. So their denial is premature because I haven't had the opportunity to complete the process. And my
okay. Mr. England, do you have any follow-up?
Mr. DiPierio and I have been in conversations in which I have forwarded the forwarded what Mr. DiPierio has said about certain repairs that need to be made, and they have been made known to Mr. Coombs. The determination that we made had a stipulation saying that if he was able to make repairs within the next 90 days, that we would give him another vehicle inspection without cost. In addition to that, there are a couple of repairs that City Fleet Manager DiPierio essentially said, like, it's kind of a catch-22. A repair on this vehicle would open it up to more problems. Not repairing this vehicle keeps it, or is a problem itself.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that Mr. Coombs said was that he believed that the determination was premature. So can you tell me about whether or not it was appropriate under the rules and law to issue the determination on February 8th?
Yes. So the inspection happened in December. We had ample time between the inspection and the determination for repairs to be made upon this vehicle, along with clarification that was being requested from City Fleet Manager Don DiPierio and was passed on to Mr. Coombs. At this point, according to the administrative rule, to have a vehicle apply and qualify for this vehicle age exemption, it has to be mechanically sound, which the City Fleet Manager essentially says, it's a real catch-22 with no good option. I have to agree, maybe it is time to retire this vehicle. Due to the mechanical, repairs that would be done or would not be done. It's
okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to deny your objection, because what's happening here is I'm hearing a lot of discussion about the facts of the case, and I want to be able to have a full-fledged discussion presentation of the facts so I can make a determination. So, Mr. Coombs, in general, the reason why it's important to note that I do not have jurisdiction to compel the city to give you more time is unless that's something that's required by code, then I don't have jurisdiction to force them to do that, especially if it's some sort of policy that they've developed and they're following their policy. But if you do want to proceed today, I will be making the decision on whether or not the evidence demonstrates that this decision issued on February 8th, the vehicle denial, whether or not that was justified by laws and rules. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and we'll go ahead with the evidentiary proceeding. What I will do is I will start with, usually I start with the city representative because they're the ones that issued the denial and that carry the burden of proof to demonstrate that their decision was justified by law and rule. However, if you want to start, Mr. Coombs, I'd be more than willing to allow you to do so. And this is the part where I place you under oath and take your testimony.
Okay.
Would you like to go first?
No.
Okay. So, and then the second question is, I'm going to have you go first, Mr. England. You've already stated some things, but I am going to have to swear you in and place you under oath and make sure that you reiterate any factual statements that are necessary to be admitted into the evidentiary record. Both parties have the option to provide an opening statement. Typically, that's useful if the case involves a lot of evidence or legal arguments. I don't think it's completely necessary for my benefit here, but you're more than welcome to do so if you'd like. You can also just waive that. So would the parties like to have opening statements, or would you like to waive the opening statements if you believe that your testimony will speak for itself?
I will waive as well.
Okay. At this time, please both raise your right hands and I'll both swear you in. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth?
Yes,
I do.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Mr. England.
The objection to this, to the ruling was essentially that, there was no real objection to the ruling, that the vehicle was denied There was no objection to the reasoning behind why this reasoning was brought up or brought before us. The administrative rules states that the any vehicle that goes through the vehicle age exemption has to be mechanically sound before it may be permitted. There's a process that happens in which a vehicle may go to the city fleet and have city inspectors go over the vehicle mechanically to make certain that it is sound. By this inspection, it was found that the vehicle is not mechanically sound. Mr. Coombs spoke with his mechanic, and his mechanic pointed to a couple of different facts that if some of the repairs that would be needed to fix items that were seen as not mechanically sound for his vehicle would open the vehicle up to more mechanical problems and make it essentially make it not mechanically sound as well. So the catch-22 here that was provided by City Fleet Manager Don DiPerio is that leaving these items unaddressed presents a mechanically unsound vehicle, and addressing these vehicles in specific ways would leave the vehicle as a mechanically unsound vehicle as well, to which the administrative rule says that we need to have the administrative rule says that we need to have a mechanically sound vehicle to grant a vehicle age exemption.
Can I just clarify? You said that the vehicle was taken to the city fleet, city inspectors, vehicle inspectors?
Yes.
And that Coombs' mechanic stated, made some conclusions regarding the condition of the vehicle. When you mentioned Coombs' mechanic, was that the city fleet?
No, that was Coombs' personal mechanic.
Okay. And then, Mr. Coombs, you can tell me a little bit more about that. Is there anything else, Mr. England?
No. Just from what we have received from City Fleet Manager Don DiPerio, this vehicle is mechanically unsound. Additional mechanical fixes that would alter or fix an initial problem would be essentially moving the spot to take a reference from Cat in the Hat.
Thank you. And I do want to clarify, was the city fleet inspector Don?
So it's the manager.
Piero, did he do the inspection on the vehicle?
No, he has this fleet of inspectors that do these inspections that he oversees, and he is our point of contact. So it's chatting with or speaking with him, getting information and clarification through him and his mechanics.
And his conclusions, what was that? What were they based on?
His conclusions were based on what his mechanic said, the report that his mechanic made, and then notions as to what Mr. Coombs' mechanic could do to fix the problem at hand, which would bring up additional problems later or down, or which would bring up additional problems after that fix had been made.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Coombs, this is your opportunity to cross-examine Mr. England. How this goes is if you have any questions about what he testified to or any of the evidence he submitted into the record, you should ask now. This is a time where you would ask one question, giving him a chance to answer, and it would be specific questions about either clarifying what he said or anything that you believe he knows about that you want to ask of.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Okay, then we'll move to you, and now's your time to provide testimony. Please tell me why specifically you are challenging the validity of the decision, the vehicle denial.
I'm challenging the validity of this decision for vehicle denial because I was not given the opportunity to submit the repairs that I have, would, and could make to the vehicle to bring it within the approval of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. There were three main issues in the original inspection that were not clear to me or my mechanic as to how to repair them. One was point number 14 on the original list, which was no lock on driver door to lock door while operator in seat and side door.
One moment, let me turn to that document. What does the document look like? Does it have red ink on it? Okay, a list.
Actually, I don't think you got, you have, I'm sorry, this is the one they sent me. You have a handwritten copy.
Okay.
The one that's.
Point 14, Exhibit 8A, it's the vehicle exemption inspection dated December 21st.
Yes.
Okay, great,
and
thank you.
I think there's one clarification. I don't think my numbers and the numbers on there may fit exactly.
No,
Mr. England has told me he transposed them.
Transcribed them.
I should say.
It's point number 15 on the vehicle inspection form.
Okay, thank you very much.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay, so, and then.
The check instrument cluster?
No,
sorry, it's on the second page of the vehicle
inspection
form. The
handwritten point number 15.
Okay, handwritten.
Lots of different points.
Let me make sure I'm there. No lock on driver door to lock door while operator. Is that what we're talking about?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
So in an email response from Mr. England on January 25th regarding that point, I asked him what the solution was, and the answer was yes. The concern was the placement of the latch makes it easy to open, either not holding the door well or accidentally opening while the vehicle is in motion. That answer just reiterated the point, but did not provide me with a solution to that issue.
What are you reading from as far as Mr. England's response? Is that
an email he sent to me?
The Wednesday, February 7th email?
No. An email he sent to me on January 25th, which he did not submit in any, this not in, has, was not in.
Did you submit it?
Did I submit it?
Right.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So tell me again, what was the date on that email?
January 25th, 2018.
And you specifically asked him?
I asked him what the solution to the point was, point 14 or 15, depending on which document you look at.
Mm-hmm.
and his response was essentially to reiterate that there was a problem, but there was no solution to the problem, which I was asking for a solution of how they suggested that I repair that. I'm going to go different. Had to find it. The other point. Point 31 on the handwritten form regarding the turn while turning to the left full lock position and moving steering kicks back at operator and scraping noise heard. This is the one that's causing us the most consternation at the moment. Going to ask them a question about ways to the city fleet would recommend that I fix that, and the response was it should be possible to open the wheel wells. Subsequent questions to that asked, well, if I open the wheel wells and it impedes the drivers, because it would open the wheel well and possibly impede into where the accelerator pedal was, what would be the solution? What could I do with the accelerator pedal? Or what other solutions could be? There was never a response back as to what the solution would be to that. I was looking for guidance of how to properly repair, and again, that guidance was never provided to me. And the last point, point 32, about the steering system that was in place on the email of on January 25th, I stated that the vehicle had passed a Washington State Department of Transportation inspection in 2016. Their response to that was, well, since it's Oregon registered, we don't think Washington inspection would be valid, but it's my understanding that state DOT inspections are essentially federal inspections and are valid across state lines. And then
what type of inspection was that?
That was a Washington State Department of Transportation vehicle inspection that occurred in July of 2016.
Was that a like a vehicle inspection that a regular vehicle would get to renew their registration?
No, or? Special for interstate charter buses.
Is there a specific title for that particular inspection that you had done in Washington in 2016?
I thought I had all this all nicely laid out here. It's called a vehicle examination report conducted by the Washington State Patrol Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Section.
Thank you.
Then in a subsequent email on the same section on January 30th, I informed Mr. England about a conversation I had with Oregon Department of Transportation inspector. Her first name is Sharon. Unfortunately, I do not have her last name. She's stationed out of the Jansen Beach office. They're right at the border at the base of the interstate bridge. She had been working with this same vehicle for many years before I owned it, and it had passed every inspection that she had ever done on the vehicle, including this time during its building in the early 2010s, and it had passed. It had never been flagged by her or ODOT at that time, and I did not receive an answer from Mr. England from that email. And then again on February 7th, I asked if an Oregon Department of Transportation inspection on the vehicle, if it passed that inspection, would that be sufficient? And then I did not receive an answer to that issue. There was subsequent to that an email that stated that even an ODOT inspection would not suffice. I would like to also point out at this time with regard to this issue, Mr. England's original letter on February 8th.
Is that in the record?
That is in the record, yes.
Okay.
The vehicle denial.
Okay.
You see there in the third paragraph, but in my fleet, I would never allow that to happen. I like to point out that that is just a subset, a selected quote on the full email that Mr. DePito had sent Mr. England. And where is that?
Is that in the record?
Yes, that is.
Yeah, it is. If you look at the whole...
There's the email 8B. It's...
Okay, thank you.
If you look in the full transcript of his answer, of which this third paragraph touches on, there is a point in that paragraph that says that they disagree with the configuration of the steering system on the vehicle, but they say they can't do anything about it. There's nothing in writing that says that that's wrong, but they just don't like it. And so I think since there's nothing in writing that says that steering system is wrong, that they don't have any basis to deny the permit on that point. And again, I would just like to say that I did not see that full transcript of the answer until I received Mr. England's denial, Mr. England's response to my hearing request.
Anything further at this time?
My object is that to reiterate that they have not answered my questions fully for me to be able to make repairs, that they shouldn't be able to deny the permit without having me be able to submit the repairs, and that their issue on the steering is one of their personal preferences not supported by Oregon Department of Transportation inspections, Washington State Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation inspections, nor can they find anything in writing that really makes that system illegal or unsafe or disallowed by any authorities.
What would that writing be? Like, can you give me an example of what that writing would be that you indicate that it does not exist as far as their support?
I don't know what I'm just quoting their full-length response that's in the information you've received, which is...
The email from Don to to Mr. England?
Which for some
reason. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there it is.
I see.
Yeah, they state in there, it says, unfortunately, we don't have anything in writing that says they can't do it. It's in like the third to last sentence in their red, or fourth to last sentence.
Got it. I do see that. Okay.
So if they can't find anything in writing that prevents me from doing it, I don't see where they would have the authority to prevent me as well.
Can you clarify? So I'm not super familiar with the specific type of inspections that occur that you had had the vehicle completed for the vehicle for ODOT and Washington Department mm-hmm. of Transportation. Are they the exact same inspections? Like, do they look at the exact same things as the city fleet inspection?
No, the city fleet inspection, I believe, is much more thorough on more wear and tear type things, although you see a lot of the list that is provided is a bunch of leaks. I believe that state inspections on, which are federally regulated and mandated and set, are more big safety issue things like brakes and steering mechanisms and that kind of stuff, not necessarily engine leaks.
Okay. Mr. England, do you have any questions for Mr. Coombs?
Yes. In the denial letter, is there a section in there that says that if you were able to get repairs done within a 3-month period, that we would honor, or that we would then comp a vehicle inspection by city fleet?
Yes, your letter does say that.
So is the problem here that the timeline for your process does not meet the timeline that we have set?
Which timeline are you referring to?
I mean, we have, so the vehicle denial was essentially saying that at this point in time we cannot permit this vehicle. However, if you are able to get mechanical repairs done to the vehicle to bring it up to being a mechanically sound vehicle, we would give you, or we would comp a vehicle mechanical inspection if those repairs were done. Pardon me. If those repairs were done within a 3-month period. So it seems to me that you were given time to have a process done for mechanical inspections. I guess my question is, do you not believe that you had, or that giving you that 3-month period is not giving you process time?
I cannot complete the inspections, complete the repair satisfactorily unless I know what is defined as satisfactorily. And on those 3 points that I've discussed, at this point in time, I still don't know what is satisfactory.
In the email that you received, as part of my packet of information, did you read the section where Don DiPirio responds to when turning left locked position, the moving steering kicks back at operator and scraping noise can be heard, where he says, quote, I have to totally agree with you. By them not fixing it, they run the risk of blown tires and or loss of steering control. If they open up the wheel wells, that's going to cause more problems. Sounds like a real catch-22 with no good option. I have to agree. Maybe it is time to retire it.
Previous questions I asked in emails to you asked for more clarification of how I could fix that to make sure that it's safe. And again, I was not given those answers. Opening up the wheel well, to me, is very vague and not specific enough as to what would satisfy requirement. And if opening up the wheel well were, say, to cause me to have to switch the accelerator pedal to the other side of the cab, would that be acceptable? There wasn't any clarification of what I could do to satisfy the requirement. I said to open up the wheel well is very vague and doesn't give me a good indication of what the proper repair would be.
Would that not be a question between you and your mechanic to figure out what a mechanically sound operation would be?
But my mechanic's not the one who has to approve the final repair. So I could go through and spend a significant amount of money to create a repair that we think and my mechanic thinks is correct, but then could be overturned by somebody at City Fleet. And so I did not want to waste my time, waste my money, waste my mechanic's time on making repairs that could ultimately be disapproved by City Fleet.
Okay, I understand. Now, with that, it seems to me that this is a question of process, not city code or administrative rule. Is that your understanding of it?
I don't have enough knowledge of inner city workings to answer that question. All I know for me is that for me, I'm not getting the information of which I feel I need to operate in order to meet the to satisfactorily meet the requirements of the code and the inspections of city fleet.
Okay, so let me see if I have any questions here. This would be the time for providing additional testimony if you believe you need to clarify something. I do want to ask Mr. England, is there a specific written policy that the Bureau of Transportation has regarding the steps or procedures that are taken when a vehicle is reviewed and the process that it was applied here?
The process that we have for vehicle age exemptions is made with City Fleet. They're a separate entity from the regulatory division. And the provisions in which we can have City Fleet perform inspections was specifically made with the notion that customers or potential permittees will have a vehicle inspected. However, further mechanical advice or information is something that they will have to get from their personal mechanics, as City Fleet does not want to have any contact between a potential permittee and their mechanics. That way they can remain as objective as possible and not get into kind of a rigmarole. That this is a relatively new process. This is stemmed within the last 4 months or so, the vehicle age exemption inspections. And so at this point in time, it is it's new. But the city fleet was very adamant at not having any contact with potential permittees.
So is there a formal written policy on the procedures that or the steps that are taken when a vehicle age exemption is received and the communications with city fleet?
No.
I'm just wondering if there's a policy document that you might be able to provide to help illuminate the process that is taken when this type of situation arises.
No, I do not believe there is a policy document on that.
Okay.
May I ask Mr. England a question at this time?
About something that he just stated?
I'll ask the question and then you can tell me if it's something. He brought up a question in my mind about when he mentioned the permittee's mechanic in relation to the city fleet.
Okay.
Okay.
You can go ahead.
Mr. England, based on your last testimony, you said that the city fleet wanted to defer to a permittee's mechanic. Is that?
No. So what I'm trying to say is that while city fleet does the inspection, the repairs are up to the permittee and the permittee's mechanic.
Okay.
So, to bring it up to a mechanically sound vehicle.
So in that case, would city fleet defer to a mechanic's judgment on what was a mechanically sound vehicle in repairing any items?
If an item is repaired and we have that vehicle go back through a city fleet inspection and it comes out smelling like roses, that would be one thing. So with the example of the wheel wells, if opening up the wheel wells is going to cause more problems, as stated by City Fleet Manager Don DiPirio, and you say, I opened up the wheel wells, knowing the history of that vehicle and knowing that opening up the wheel wells would add to additional mechanical problems, opening up the wheel well would not be a satisfactory solution to the problem that is trying to solve.
So if my mechanic came up with any solution that prevented that, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If your mechanic found a solution and, like I said, within 3 months, we would be be more than happy to have bring that vehicle back through the vehicle, the city fleet inspection at no cost to you. If whatever your mechanic decided to do kind of passed the mustard for that second city fleet mechanical inspection, there would be no issue that I could see.
So I, again, my question to you, Mr. England, would be what would, and I still don't know on these issues, what would pass the mustard?
I'm not a mechanic.
Well, that's where I think.
I'm not a mechanic, and for better or worse, the process that we have is that city fleet does the inspection, gives you their detailed notes, and it is up to you as the owner of the vehicle to go to your mechanic and suss out what items or how these items should be resolved.
But there's still a chance that what my mechanic decides is resolved may not be resolved in city fleet size, correct?
There's a potential, but I can't see the future on that.
Okay. I need to just solidify my point that I'm trying to minimize my exposure and expense and time for a lot of people, and without a clear definition of what the repair is, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix it, and I can't relate that. You know, we've got intermediaries. It's getting. I think I've made my point.
Are there any specific laws, rules, or policies that you want to point to with respect to your argument that essentially you're arguing that the city should be furnishing you with a solution or more specific information to make a specific repair? In order to have further assurance that whatever repair you make will enable you to obtain the vehicle age exemption.
Correct.
So is there anything specific that you know of that requires the city representative to be able to furnish you such a solution or such information?
I am not aware of any city policy, law, or anything like that. Like Mr. England said, it's a very new policy for the city, and it's, you know, it looks like in some ways I'm a guinea pig for all the potential flaws as it works itself out. So I'm not aware of anything that mandates an exact answer from the city to my questions, other than just a customer service standpoint.
Okay. Is there any other testimony that you believe I need to hear or have put in the record in order for before we close the hearing?
No.
Okay, and this is the opportunity to provide closing statements. It already sounds like, Mr. Coombe, you've summarized your yes. argument, but formally I do have to offer that to you. So, Mr. England, do you wish to provide a closing statement?
Sure. The appeal to the code hearings office was based off of a process and process objection, not an objection to the administrative rule in which the vehicle denial was made. At that point, it's unfortunate. Like, it's not for the code hearings office to adjudicate that.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reserve decision on this particular issue and the continued objection raised by Mr. England, and I'll have that sent out to the parties in a written order. I would think that based upon what I've heard, Mr. Coombs, a lot of what, you know, you desired to have produced as the outcome of this hearing is more information for you to be able to take action, to be able to see what steps you specifically needed to take. So I do encourage you to keep working with Mr. England or whomever to try to get those answers that you need. And I do want to refer you, if it's a customer service thing that you would like to suggest, perhaps you could reach out to the city ombudsman. And there are some brochures on that table in the blue brochure there, and they will entertain and take in complaints about city processes. So they may be more open to being able to provide you with assistance. They have the tools, perhaps, if they are willing to help see to it that the process is improve to your satisfaction. So that there are also other alternatives. That's what I'm just trying to say, is there are other alternatives in which you could try to seek a remedy to the issue that you've got here. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be making that decision based upon whether or not the evidence demonstrates the decision issued on February 2nd or February 8th is correct. And I'll get that out to you in the next few weeks. Are there any questions?
Just if my address has changed, how I go about the mailing address.
If your mailing address has changed, do you know what it is right now?
Yes.
Okay. We'll ask you to fill out a form.
Okay.
You'll just put in the new address, and we'll get it submitted into the file.
Okay. Great.
Okay. So with that also being the case, actually, I need to just formally admit all exhibits, exhibits 1 through including 8C, into the record, including exhibit 9, which will be the new change of address form from Mr. Coombs. Okay. The hearing is now closed.